Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the latest episode of the Belgian Football Podcast. This is episode 22. My name is Ben Jackson. I'm your host. And as always, I'm joined by our very own experts, Scott and Joris. How are you guys doing?
Ho, 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 everyone. Yes, we're back for a Christmas-themed week episode of the BFP.
I'm very excited about that.
Absolutely. It is the week of Christmas. So, yeah, before we start, we hope everyone is going to stay safe over this period and yeah, make the most of whatever sort of Christmas you can enjoy over here in England. It's not going to be very usual, that's for sure. It's going to be very quieter affair than it is usually, but there's some football going on Boxing Day and the days after, so that'll at least keep us entertained. So in this episode, we're going to do what we always do, just run through our games of the week. We actually had some midweek games as well, so plenty to choose from for the guys this week, alongside players of the week. Just do a quick roundup. We've got a listener question, which is very topical at the moment, concerning transfer rumours. So we'll definitely go into that. And then we'll look ahead to the Boxing Day fixtures and the fixtures on the 27th as we close 2020 in the Belgian Pro League season. So as usual, we'll start with Scott. Give us your game of the week and your player of the week.
Well, I went for Tuesday's game because obviously we had two rounds of game. We had a full round of, well, almost a full round of midweek fixtures, not quite full because of COVID, obviously, and game cancellations. But I went for the Tuesday evening game, which was a bit of a magic one between the Cercle Bruges and Charleroi, the Jan Bredel. It finished, as we know, Cercle 3, Charleroi 4. It certainly wasn't without incident, including 5 second-half goals. Cercle, as we know, have been on a pretty miserable run of form recently, so this was a chance to see if they were able to kind of address that. And actually, for a long period in the first half, I thought they kind of looked back more like themselves, raced into a kind of 2-0 lead within the first 25 minutes, two well-taken goals by Ihe Ugbo, and they looked good. They looked really comfortable on the ball. They looked like their recent troubles were kind of behind them. And then, of course, a red card, another game with a red card that completely changes everything. Leonardo Lopez picks up his second yellow after 43 minutes. Cercle go in 2-0 up at half-time. And obviously, there was a discussion in the Charleroi dressing room because when they came out, they actually looked like a different side in the second half. I don't know how much of that was to do with the red card, but they weren't really in the game up until that point. Came out, were much more energetic, up the tempo, started pulling Cercle all over the place and, you know, started the process of kind of wearing them down. They missed a penalty, Charleroi, after 60 minutes, actually. And I thought, is this gonna dent that charge a little bit? Because they really came out flying in the second half. But there was a 7-minute spell at the midway point in the second half where the entire game just turned on its head. It went from 2-0 to Cercle to 3-2 Charleroi, Golazade, and Nicholson both scoring within a minute, which was just kind of incredible, actually. Morioka turned it around, made it 3-2 after 70 minutes, and kind of the collapse was kind of complete. It was interesting because the drama wasn't actually done yet. You know, Musaba pulled it back to 3 each after 85 minutes, and Cercle were delighted because they looked like, you know, they'd kind of stolen a draw and would probably hold on, but it wasn't to be. A minute later, Stephen Wilhelms got the winner for Charleroi, and I really feel for Paul Clément, actually, because for half this game, Cercle were looking good. Red card changes everything, and that pained face he had on the touchline afterwards is kind of burned in my brain, actually. Really feel for him. Good game, though.
Yeah, definitely. Just a nice little goal fest, really, wasn't it, midweek?
And
quite a big result for Charleroi, because I think we've spoken about it. Like, they'd been on an absolutely terrible run of form. Obviously, picked up a win the week before against St. Truiden, with 2-1, again against a side with 10 men. Then they follow that up with this win, again against a side with 10 men. But, like, it's not convincing because they struggle through the game. And then they now, as of last Friday, beat Anderlecht 1-0. So they've kind of completely turned it around. 9 points out of the last 3 games. Kind of, I guess the curse has been lifted. The Scott curse has been lifted. And this is the result. This is what we're seeing now, is like they can come back into these games and Yeah, I think it's one of those things where it could be one of those halftime team thoughts that kind of like stops the rot and kind of pushes them back into what we saw at the beginning of the season. So yeah, poor Paul Clement, I think, yeah, completely agree with you. That it would have been a massive win and it would have been a massive point because they themselves on a terrible run of form and it was like good performance. And then you just had that bad luck because you get someone gets sent off and it kind of changes everything and you think you've saved the point. And then, yeah, you end up losing the game 2 minutes later. Just he must, if he had hair, have been tearing it out, I'm sure. But yeah, was your player of the week from this game as well, Scott?
Yeah, it was actually kind of for one of the reasons you touched on, Ben. Actually, I went for Golazade this week, Ali Golazade, Charleroi's 24-year-old Iranian left winger. I just think he's had quite a good week, both games this week. Obviously, he's scored in both. You know, he got his goal against Circle and he was responsible for that dramatic stoppage time winner against Anderlecht on Friday night. And I just think his contribution this week's been really good. I think he's recovered his energy, which he'd been missing for a few weeks and had been missing from the whole Charleroi side because they'd looked a bit flat. And that willingness to kind of run in behind defenders and his link-up play with Morioka has just been really good this week. He's looking good at running for lost causes and getting stuck into 50-50s as well. And just a really strong all-round contribution from him this week. I think his work rate's been great. And he's won, I think, just over 70% of all his tackles across the season so far. And that's down to his work rate and his energy as well. I've always kind of quite liked him as a player. He's one of those sort of mischievous characters, I think, that people kind of feed off. And that's always a good thing to have in the side. He's started all 18 of Charleroi's games this season, so he's one of the first names in the team sheet. 5 goals, 2 of them this week, 3 assists, all of which have got Charleroi back within 3 points of the top of the table. So the wheels are back on the bus.
Yeah, no, I'm a massive fan of Golazade. I really like the way he plays. I like their balance of wingers with Fall on one side and Golazade on the other side. I really like, and yeah, like you said, his stats this season have been pretty decent. I think when you also consider, like, he was such a bargain for them back in, they bought him back in 2018 for something like a really small fee, like under £300,000. Not sure what that'd be in euros, but that's nothing. And you think he's probably worth a couple of million now.
Yeah.
Not like loads and loads, but like, yeah, he's probably like worth 10 times that in terms of what he provides for them. So it's just like a really smart recruitment piece there from them. Only 24, so still young, like coming into his prime. I know what you mean. He just have this kind of like boundless energy. And for me, he's one of those players that I watch and I think you just love playing football. There's something about you that I can just tell that he loves to be on the pitch. He loves to try things and do things that, yeah, other players don't always try. So I think, yeah, I get what you mean. Like when he refines the energy and stuff, like he's quite enjoyable to watch, I guess.
Yeah, I think other people feed off it. There's something, something mischievous about his smile as well. It's just, you know, it's a bit like Holhouser. I think there's something about him that's difficult to put your finger on, but that I think other players feed off so that when he's at it, I think other players kind of lift their game and he's had a good week.
No, I agree. I think, yeah, definitely an important player for Charleroi.
Do we think that Charleroi will break their own streak? They're halfway now. 3 wins out of 3. They've gotten 6 out of 6 before. The next games are, I'll look it up for you guys.
Yeah, that'd be the important.
Away at Antwerp this weekend. Oostende, also away, is the next game. Well, after a very short winter break. At home against Mechelen, which then would equal the streak. And if they want to break it, it's again against Anderlecht already, the return game.
Oh, if they beat Antwerp, then maybe. I think that's the out of those ones. I can see them being Oostende and Mechelen, which means they probably won't now that I've said that. But out of all those games, I think the Antwerp game and then, yeah, the Anderlecht one. That was like a tough game they had against them on Friday. That was like a real slog, but they managed to come out on top. So I don't know if that will give them some confidence going into that other game. But I guess by the whatever of January, who knows what will have happened in the transfer market and stuff, like new players for teams and stuff. So I'm going to say no. I don't think they'll better it, but I think they could equal it.
Interesting day.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Sorry to be boring, but yeah, I think, I agree with Ben.
What about you, Joris? What's your thoughts?
It will be tough. I don't think they will beat Antwerp, actually. So then it's a no for me. I do see them picking up a lot of points. That's probably the more important thing for them.
Yeah, and that could be really crucial with the title race happening, which kind of leads me nicely into my game of the week, which kind of has a direct impact on the title race for sure, which is Ghent against Bruges. It took place this Sunday. And it was Ghent who came out winners, 1-0, thanks to an own goal from Rika. But yeah, I don't know how this one ended with just one goal. Like, both sides had quite a few chances. Yaremchuk had two really good chances. One in the first half when a one-on-one with Mignolet, which I'm sure he'll have wanted that back because he just hit it straight at the keeper. Then in the second half, he had basically a free header that he hit against the bar. For Bruges, they had the chances, but yeah, I think this was Sinan Bolat's best game in a Ghent jersey for him. He made 10 saves. Some of them were quite simple, but his positioning was quite good for quite a few of them, like coming out, narrowing the angle, saving him with his legs, whatever he could. And he's been kind of struggling, I think. I don't think he's looked confident in goal, and I hope this should actually help him gain some confidence. Like, keeping a side like Bruges out is always quite a good thing to do. And yeah, no, I think kind of you could see Ghent starting to like kind of gain some confidence, gain a little bit of momentum under the new former manager. And yeah, I was kind of rooting for Ghent. Sorry to upset any Bruges fans, but I just want the title race to be open as possible. And I want kind of like, I don't mind if Bruges win it, but as long as it's tight and there's competition and stuff like that. So I thought this was actually like a really good result for the league as a whole, because it keeps things tight and close. I actually, before the game, I thought this was a game that I could see Bruges winning like 1-0 or something like that. I've spoken about it before, where I think they could just like bore their way to the title by winning 1-0 each time. But yeah, I guess with Bolat making 10 saves, it brings up that question again that we've kind of talked about quite a lot, in that where or what striker Bruges should bring in. We've seen, I'm sure other people have seen, there's rumours about Divock Origi, but yeah, we kind of discussed it on our WhatsApp chat, and all of us are pretty much thinking that's not going to happen. Like, I don't see why he would go to Bruges when he could probably get loads of other offers in higher leagues. So yeah, Joris, I'm guessing you were quite happy with this result in the end.
For now, yes, of course. Also, well, it has raises a few questions, I suppose. Ghent is actually quite close to the top four now, which is important for the end of the season. Beerschot has two games in hand, so they might be further away than it seems like now. But also, yeah, indeed, Bolat's playing a good game. But also, how did Ghent really turn around? Because not that much seems to have changed, to be fair. Except the performances, of course, are better. But like, yeah, we know the players didn't like to play under all of the previous coaches, apparently. And now they do. Now they're motivated, and now they start winning again. So I'm wondering if that has something to do with the whole situation. But yeah, well, I was happy with the result for sure. Yeah,
I think there's a good chance it's going to go to the wire, as they like to say it. I really do. And you know, there's a lot of leagues in Europe like that at the moment. The pro leagues, not exceptional in that sense. That a lot of leagues are absolutely wildly open at the top and bottom at the moment. But we know how competitive the pro league is, and this season has just been sort of insanely so. Almost, you know, the top sides have largely underperformed, and things at the bottom, as we'll discuss, are becoming unbelievably interesting, I think.
Charleroi are just 3 points off Bruges now. Like, despite having a terrible run of form, they're right back in it.
Yeah, yeah. I think, you know, up until their, you know, recent upturn in form, where they've kind of found their mojo again, I was thinking they're one defeat away from probably being out of it, actually. But they're absolutely right back in it again. And, you know, it's just swinging about wildly week to week at the moment.
Yeah, and one more thing about Bruges. Apparently, they went down 1-0 three times now, and they lost three times 1-0. So they when they concede first, they don't seem to recover. That's basically the message. It's a bit psychological, I guess. Yeah, just one of these things, I guess.
Yeah, I think that's right, like, now. as a coach in Clermont, like, that's something he needs to look at. Like, why, when they go 1-0 down, like, what tactically are the other side's doing that's stopping them from scoring? Like, I know Bollat made quite a few saves, but, like, is it because they don't have someone that they trust to bring off the bench to play up front to score them goals? Like, stuff like that. Like, why is a team like that struggling to, like, to score goals? Like,
I was just going to say, Ben, I think one of the factors in that is there doesn't often seem to really be much of a plan B with Bruges. So, you know, if things aren't going well, then there's no real alternative. There's no significant change in shape or system. It's kind of little bits of tinkering, I've noticed. And that's probably because they don't have a striker that's necessarily recognised or that they're entirely comfortable with either. So they're trying to provide service to rotating strikers almost, so they don't have a lot of room to manoeuvre. That's how I feel about it at the moment.
I think, like, if you can, when you compare the two sides, you look at someone like Yaremchuk, like, he, for Ghent, he is their focal point, he is a striker, whereas, like, you're playing Dikala Talara up front as the striker, and I've said it, I know, I'm sure you guys have said it as well, like, I don't see him as a striker. I don't think he is a striker. In that, I think he's more of a winger, maybe more of an attacking midfielder that would play slightly deeper, that wants to get on the ball. I don't see him as, like, a leading line striker. Showing, because then they're playing Okereke on the wing as well. It's like, why don't you just play him up front? I think as well, like, from what I've watched, I feel like they're better when Noah Lang is on the pitch. I think they're more creative. I think he tries different things. He's more of a goal threat, maybe. So, yeah, they kind of got to work it out. And I think, yeah, January could be quite important for them. They want to sell Klemenčić. I don't know how easy that's going to be. If they can then replace him with a striker, that would probably be the goal for them, I guess.
Also, just one last thing. Again, I brought this point up a few times already, or at least once in the podcast, and probably a bit more with you guys. Like, why do you, if you need to score, why do you change in an injury time? Why?
Yeah.
Like, I will keep hitting this nail because I just can't get my head out of it. Yeah. And it's not that Clément is the only trainer to do though, coach to do so. So I'm still wondering why. Yeah, also just that.
Yeah.
Can someone please explain?
Maybe we'll get him on the pod. Because it's like I think that you've written down in our notes section, Joris, it's like Yusuf Badji comes on in the 90th minute for Clinton Matter. Like, what's he going to do? Like, how many minutes of injury time will I think there's like 3? Or what's he going to do in 3 minutes? Like, it's so hard. Like, I don't know, even playing like an amateur football level, like coming off the bench is difficult in any like footballing situation because you have to get accustomed to the pace of the game. And it takes a bit of time to get used to that. And like, sometimes you can get lucky and you'll just score a goal. But yeah, strange. Strange managerial decisions. But hey, what do we know? We just talk on a podcast. So my player of the week is actually someone who I've been really impressed with this season, actually. I went for Abdoulaye Seck of Antwerp in their 3-0 win over Vaslan Beveren, which was quite comfortable in the end. I wrote about it for Total Football Analysis. So if you want to see like a more in-depth look into the game, check that out. Yeah, looking through his stats and stuff, he won 11 of his duels. He was dominant in the air, made some really good tackles, made about 5 recoveries, I think it was. Just had a really, really good, solid game. And yeah, I don't know what you guys think, but I've been kind of quite impressed with him at the back for Antwerp. I know that like they've had some struggles where they concede goals and stuff, but I don't know why. I just feel like it's never his fault. I don't know if that's just me not looking close enough, but yeah, I just kind of have this thing that he's been quite solid. And I think especially when they've played against Tottenham in the Europa League and stuff, I thought he's always looked really good, like kind of like a leader at the back as well. Like the back three played really, really well. Him, Richie Delatte, and who was the other one? Jelin as well. But I just thought Seck kind of is like the standout defender for me at Antwerp at the moment. And yeah, he got I've been wanting to give him a player of the week, and I felt that this week against Beveren was the time to do it.
Yeah, it was a good performance.
So, Joris, why don't you give us a nice little rundown of what else happened across the league?
Yeah, so I've the things about Bruges were actually already on my list. I don't have that much this time, but yeah, Scott already touched on it a little. Everything is closing down at the bottom now with Moeskroen, Mechelen and Sint-Truiden all winning away games this weekend. Surprisingly for Sint-Truiden, it was also their first away win of the season, which is a bit odd because, of course, home and away is a bit of a different concept this season than usual. Maybe there is still some psychology involved. Again, I wanted to make the link with the Club Brugge and not getting back to it. Like, these are just these things that just seem to happen somehow. And to go back to Scott's game, Cercle, on the other hand, are really dragged into the battle now. And also Eupen, they have a few games in hand, I think two or three against all of the opponents. But they shouldn't waste these games because otherwise they could also still be in trouble. And there's a few teams like Oostende actually is not that far above him, and Kortrijk, even though they seem to have decent seasons, and I don't think they will get into trouble, but yeah, it is closing down, so they should not let loose anyway. And also, Standard had their first home loss since the 26th of December last year, so they just didn't make it into a full year. And maybe this is also a bad omen for Montagnier's spell at the club. He might not make a year either if it goes on like this.
Last couple of days, the rumor mill has been churning wildly, and you know I've been coming across and hearing lots of things, lots of suggestions kind of flying around. So I think there's a lot of private conversations going on there, and we'll see what happens. You know, by the time we're next together to record, because something could well have happened. Whether he's talk of him moving sideways, actually in some form to remain in the coaching staff, not be entirely removed, but somebody else to effectively come in as head coach. So I think it'll depend on availability as well, because some of the people who've been mentioned, I think, are currently in jobs, which obviously is a bit problematic at the moment. But that's a fluid situation, that one.
Yeah, and they've got Sint-Truiden next, so on Boxing Day, and I can imagine if that doesn't go well, that could well be the end for Mr. Montagnier. Speaking of Sint-Truiden, I just wanted to pick up what you said there, Joris. I think the reason they don't win many away games is because they don't take the mascot with them. And clearly, the mascot is like the heart and the soul of that club. Like,
How could I not think of that?
Yeah, like he's always there waving the flags, like looking dejected when they lose. Clearly, like if they took him with them, I guarantee they'd win so many more away games because he's just amazing. And he's definitely the least scary mascot that we've seen in this league so far. the Oostende ones are genuinely terrifying. Like,
they're Galen Manton.
Scariest looking things I've ever seen. Like, children must be terrified of them. If any Oostende fans will definitely know what I'm talking about. If you haven't seen the Oostende mascots, definitely give them a Google search. But be prepared for a terrifying sight, really, because they are... Yeah, it's a bit weird.
We note Ben says the canary of the Sint-Truiden, the mascot, is going to bring them more points. I think that also shows why you're not a coach.
Stick him in at central midfield. I'm sure he can spray some passes around and stuff. I'm sure he'll do a great job. Maybe even he could have been the next manager. Who knows?
Would he be allowed in the costume on the pitch?
Even in the costume, I reckon.
At least he'll be light in his feet, guys. He's a bird.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Exactly. Like, I'm sure he's got some moves in there. If you haven't, there's some great pictures of that mascot. He's definitely kept me entertained during Sint-Truiden games, just seeing him waving the flag or sitting there looking completely and utterly depressed as they throw games away or lose games. So props to him. What a great mascot he is. I think we'll take a quick break now, guys. And then, on the other side, we'll dive into the little bit of news that we have, listener questions and the upcoming fixtures. Hello everyone, and welcome back to part two of episode 22 of the Belgian Football Podcast. And a couple of news items to go through. We'll start with the kind of announcement that's been coming out recently about Joachim Mele is finally getting his move. This time it's to Atalanta instead of Marseille. You always correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe it's going to be above 10 million euros, around like 13 million euros. Where do you think this leaves like Genk in terms of, like, obviously it's a decent transfer fee. He's a good player though, to be fair. I think he'll do quite well there, but where do you think it leaves him in terms of that right-hand side of the pitch and stuff? Are you happy with the cover that you've got there already anyway?
Well, that depends on what the plans are. Difficult to say. Munoz is actually, well, has already gotten there as like the backup for Mele, but now they play a different formation and he's performing incredibly well, getting more and more fond of him as a player as well at that position. So if they keep this formation, then definitely they will need a direct replacement for Mela. Yeah, otherwise, yeah, I don't know. Like last weekend, actually, he wasn't there because of an injury. And now Uronen had to play at against his feet, which was very difficult to watch because he clearly doesn't have anything on his left, on his right foot. So he only seems to use it to get on the bus, but yeah, not for playing football. Yeah, you could see we need something there to replace either Mela or an extra central defender. But I think that the idea so far has been to get a recruitment for both of these positions. You can also see the fragility of the squad already because of these formations change, though, because there's the quantity of players is enough, but they're not accustomed to the 3-4-3 formation, and two players were missing and they had to change quite a few things. In the end, it all went quite well. They actually also got their third clean sheet of the season. But yeah, to get back to the question, yes, they will need a direct replacement for sure. And yeah, I don't have any rumors for that yet, so I can't share them with you. Yeah, it will be. Yeah, I do think this is going to be very important for Henk and also Henk's chances for the rest of the season. But you can't deny him the transfer now, of course, especially with like already keeping him a bit too long, maybe last summer.
Yeah.
So luckily, he performed really well, though, so he's an example player for that, I think. And yeah, now got his big breakthrough, so I wish him all the luck there, of course. And we'll see how I'm confident in Henk scouting to find a solution for that, but it won't be easy.
Yeah, no, I think as well, like with the money that you could get for him, I think you could probably get a centre back and a right back into that squad. But yeah, it'll be interesting to see who they go with in January. But yeah, fair play to Mela. Like you said, like put his head down, kept going. He could have kind of stopped really, because it would have been a really frustrating situation for him with the Marseille move. But yeah, he gets his moves to Atalanta. Yeah, and it should be a good one.
Just saw it's confirmed by the club as well, so it's not a rumor anymore.
There we go. Live on the podcast as well.
Breaking news, yes.
Amazing. We spoke a little bit earlier about the relegation battle tightening up, and I think we should probably dive a little bit more into that in this segment as well. So currently, when I just get the table up, St. Truiden are at the bottom, played 17, they're on 14 points. So they're 18th. 12th place, Juppen, obviously they've played quite a few games less than everyone else, but let's just take it by points. And that's like what's at the moment. Like they've played three less games, but they've obviously got to play those games. No guarantee that they win those games. They are 6 points ahead of St. Truiden. So you've been in 12th, St. Truiden in 18th, separated by 6 points. In between that, we have Cercle Brugge in 13th, Zulte Waregem in 14th, Vazan Beveren in 15th, Mechelen in 16th, and Mouscron in 17th. And all those other teams are on 17 or 18 points. Scott, out of those teams, who are you not concerned about, or I guess least concerned about, and who are you most concerned about?
You know, the funny thing is, as of right now, I have absolutely no idea. Such as things been over the last couple of weeks with results, all of the sides at the bottom have been picking up results that I wasn't expecting, which has just led to kind of teams getting drawn into this, like Cercle. I mean, although their form wasn't great, they've really been dragged into something that I don't think even they saw coming now. Yeah, 6 points separating the bottom seven is unbelievable to me. Looking at it, I really wouldn't like to call it, and I say that based on the fact that I think there are reasons for the sides, you know, in the danger positions at the moment, St. Truiden and Mouscron, to be optimistic. St. Truiden actually aren't playing that badly. I mean, Peter Mas's first couple of games, there's been a nice energy to their play and they have been creating chances. Their issue, obviously, is just silly mistakes at the back. That's what really they need to kind of, you know, kind of tighten up. Mouscron, whatever they're doing, is kind of starting to work slowly but surely, and they've rejuvenated themselves to a certain extent. They're back within a fighting chance, because, you know, 3-4 weeks back they looked completely gone. Mechelen are still a massive worry to me. I don't see a lot of positive signs there unless they can get some unexpected results. It's changing week on week, and that relegation hot potato is getting passed between sides with, you know, alarming rapidity at the moment. It's exciting stuff, actually. I haven't seen a relegation dogfight in any league that's been as interesting as this for a long time.
Yeah, no, completely. And it's like, there's so many teams in it. Like, a couple of results in Oostend could be dragged into it, or Kortrijk could be dragged into it. I know, like, obviously you can have these games in hand, but out of all the teams that are kind of down there, I feel like they've put in some really good performances, and they're kind of, their position in the table doesn't kind of reflect that. So I feel like they, touch wood, should be fine. Circle as well, I feel like they could turn it around. I feel like from what we saw at the beginning of the season, they've got the players there to do it. They've also got, I think we've spoken about it before, they've got the money as well. So like in January, you can bring some players in. Kind of like saying this hopefully, because I'd like Paul Clement to stay as well. Like he's good for us as an English language football account, kind of to access some interviews and stuff like that without kind of losing the translation, I guess, of what's being said. But below
Step
that...
forward, Joris.
Yeah, without just Joris having to explain everything to us, for sure. But like results are down. Like I get what you mean about Mechelen. I'm worried about Nuno da Costa's made such a difference at Mouscron already. They look way more threatening. Like you said, St. Truiden don't actually play badly. Beveren as well. They've got goal scorers in their team. Zolta just seem to get random results. Like, I think it's weird because they've kind of, apart from Circle, they've all been in a little bit of form and had some wins and stuff. So yeah, I think we're going to be in for a really exciting relegation scrap. And if we get a really exciting title race as well, we're definitely going to be spoiled this season in what's been like a pretty depressing year, 2020. If we can have a really exciting relegation and title battle, I think we'd probably accept that. That'd be quite nice.
My concern with Mouscron is actually that they might be too dependent on Da Costa, because mm-hmm. if he wouldn't be there, or if, hopefully it doesn't happen, but if he would be having an injury or anything,
yeah,
it's tough to see who will score the goals, and not only score the goals but also create stuff. Okay, Farage is doing quite a good job, it seems, there, and Hadas should be okay with that as well, but yeah, then they need their main man up front who is doing particularly well since he's joined.
The margins are so fine at the moment that I think it is something like that, Joris. You're dead right that ultimately is going to decide this. It might be, you know, which striker or which defender becomes injured at absolutely the wrong moment. And that's probably what's going to tip this either way. Because I don't see the tightness of this changing much between now and the very end either. So a bit like the top of the table, I think this will definitely go to the wire, even if the title doesn't. I think relegation will. And I think something as seemingly straightforward as a couple of injuries might be the thing that makes a difference for a side. But of course, we've still got January to come. So, you know, when we get into February, if hopefully things are still going, which, you know, I'm pretty confident they will be in some form, then that will have a big bearing on this, I think, as well, particularly who some of these sides might bring in. I tend to agree with Ben. I think Open and Cercle, I think they've shown enough to indicate they'll get some more results that will see them okay. I mean, looking at it at the moment, I think it could be any two from the current bottom five, I think.
Yeah, no, I completely agree with both of you, and especially yours about Da Costa. If you haven't seen, there was this play on, I think it was in the Standard game. I can't actually remember. I just remember, like, I think Alinga plays this, like, really, like, clever pass to Da Costa, who just goes on this mazy run where he, like, completely skins one player, skins a couple of others, and then doesn't finish. But just the dribbling that he showed there and, like, the skill, if you haven't seen it, definitely check it out. I think it's in the Standard Liège-Mouscron fixture, so check the highlights of that one. There's this really great moment where you just see him, like, taking three or four Standard players out of the game with a bit of, like, clever trickery and stuff. Really, really good to see. Yeah. Fingers crossed he doesn't get injured, because I think he'll keep them within the battle, and he's just an exciting player to watch, and we've definitely enjoyed watching him. While we're speaking about Mouscron, I think we should probably just touch on quickly that the board meeting took place this evening as a recording on the 22nd of December. And yeah, so basically what's come out of it is Gerard Lopez has confirmed that he's going to continue his involvement with Mouscron. Like what happened with him at Lille, he will stay and keep being involved in Mouscron. However, the agreement between Lille and Mouscron that's existed, and there's been like quite a few Lille players that have gone over to Mouscron, that agreement, they've kind of just said it's effective until June 2021. I'm guessing that might be when it ends, because without Lopez being involved in Lille anymore. I don't see why it continue. I did quite a funny on the translation of their on their website speaking about him remaining about Lopez remaining in, and they talk about the possibilities of hatching young players. Kind of sounds like they're like growing them in a lab through eggs or something. They're like, out of this egg we produce a Herve Coffee, and this is the young, like, exciting young player we're producing. So yeah, a bit of a strange translation. Yeah, I think there's it's good to have some clarity from Muscolo. I'm sure you guys would agree. Scott, I know you were talking about this in the break about there's no real need for him to sell Muscolo and not be involved in Muscolo going forward.
Yeah, there's no pressure on him. Obviously, there was issues at Lille which kind of precipitated an exit there. But there's no real reason for that to have too much of a direct input on Muscron, and maybe his sole focus will shift there now. We'll see over time. But I think the main thing is it's encouraging that Muscron have now got clarity on that, because obviously lots of people were wondering. And as long as there isn't public clarity on it, then obviously it creates uncertainty and unease, which is the last thing the club needs or wants. So it's good that that's happened, and it, you know, they can continue working away now.
Yeah, especially before January as well. Like, it could be quite an important January window for them. So to have that kind of clarity of ownership and stuff is definitely good. Just two more points. I wanted to pick the brains of Joris slightly on this one. So kind of let's go to the second tier very quickly, guys. So it looks like at the moment in pole position, we have Union Saint-Gilloise, former giant of Belgian football. Haven't been back in the Pro League for years. I was going to go and count, but yeah, it looked like it would take me a
almost
while to count.
Half a century, let's say it like that.
There we go. So they're currently 9 points clear of Salang in second place. On the weekend, they had a really, really big 2-1 victory over Vestalo, who were in third. And yeah, Joris, as our resident Belgian, you'll probably know a lot more about USG than Scott or I. What's like, how do you think people feel about seeing a team like that back in the top flight? And Dante Van Zier, I think we should speak a bit about him. 12 goals this season, 4 assists, leading both statistics for the side as well.
Yeah, so about Union, yeah, I think everyone would like, well, most people at least will like to see them back at the first tier, in the first tier to, yeah, it's indeed just a tradition club. And, well, it would be nice to have them back. I do think they will be promoted with this kind of margin. They should be quite clear already. Always early to tell, but yeah, I feel like they should do well. And yeah, also just going back to the game of last weekend, they were very convincing. They actually scored 2 more goals, which should not have been disallowed by the VAR. Well, if there would have been a VAR, but there isn't in second tier against Westerlo as well. So they're looking really full of confidence. So I don't think there's any stopping them if they can keep this. About Van Zier, well, yeah, he's a young prospect. I'm happy to see him do well. He actually comes out of the Genk Academy, but he also is one of these players that already suffered 2 of ACL injuries. He also had two years ago, he had a good spell at Beerschot. Of course, this was still also in second tier, where he was the top scorer of the team, maybe of the league as well, but I'm not that sure about that, but at least he scored 15 plus goals in the league then. And last season, he was actually at Mechelen in first year. Then there, he didn't perform as well as hoped. Both sides hoped, I guess. He went back to Genk, and yeah, now it was the time to sell him in the end. Also because he wanted to get regular playing time. And yeah, he seems to have made a good choice in Union. And yeah, he seems to be performing really well. He's a fast-paced striker or winger. Yeah, and he's scoring the goals, obviously, for Union, and yeah, giving the assist. Yeah, well, given his positions, that probably makes sense that he provides these stats for Union. Yeah, and it's an interesting prospect. I hope to see him back at in the first year as well. I would be happy to see both Van Zier and Union in the first year again.
Yeah. No, definitely. It'd be cool to see them back in the top flight next season. And yeah, we hope they can make it happen. Just quickly moving on, as we are running low on time. Scott, upcoming fixture that you're looking forward to next weekend, or this is this weekend that the fixtures are played. I don't know, Christmas time, I kind of lose track of any sort of days and whatever day. I know that Boxing Day there's football, but I don't know what day Boxing Day is. So yeah, game coming up this weekend, Scott, which one are you looking forward to?
I'm going to go for a top of the table clash this time. I've got my red pen on Anderlecht's home game against Beerschot. I think that could be a really, really interesting one. That's actually Sunday, the 27th, that one.
Thanks. Now I know that's the Sunday, so the Saturday's the 26th. Perfect. Joris, what game are you looking forward to?
I'm also looking forward to that one, but I will take Scott's advice. Watch them all.
Absolutely.
Yeah, but apart from that, I'm looking forward to Antwerp and against Charleroi. Yeah, it will be interesting to see Antwerp finally won again. Charleroi is also in a winning mood again. And we already touched on it a bit in the first part, of course. I think this could also this could turn things around again for the spots inside the top four straight away. But like, if Charleroi wins, they probably are out of sight for Antwerp. But if Antwerp wins, they're almost at Charleroi, so it's one of these 6-point games.
Yeah, there's quite a few 6-point games this weekend, actually, aren't there? So I went, as always, for the relegation scrap, Mechelen against Musclon. Definitely a 6-pointer this one. Two sides, same points, locked together in the table. I think it's going to be a really important one. Also, Cercle Brugge against Ultraval again. I think Cercle really, really need that win. So those are kind of my two games to look out for. But yeah, as the guy said, plenty of interesting ones coming up.
Quickly come back. Another one of these 6-point games is actually indeed Scott's game of the week or weekend, Anderlecht Beerschot. If Beerschot win, they would surpass Anderlecht with two games still in hand. So that would be not so good for Anderlecht. And if Anderlecht wins, then they've got some margin and then they put some pressure on these two games for Beerschot.
Yeah. No, so many possibilities this weekend. It could all change so quickly in this tight table. So we've got two listener questions. One quite quick one, I'm sure we can answer quite quickly, from James Milford, who emailed us, basically asking how to watch the league on TV. Unfortunately, James, there's just no real way to do it in the UK at the moment. So you can use the YouTube channel for like highlights and stuff. The clubs are quite good at putting out highlights quite soon. Well, some are better than others. Some do it like a few hours after. Some will do it a few days. The league, 11 Sport, YouTube channel, 11 Sport Belgium, will do like a roundup of each match day. Probably like 3 or 4 days later, they'll release that on YouTube. We'll start sharing these on our Twitter and social media accounts as well. So if people can't be bothered to go looking for themselves, we'll find them for you. So that's kind of the only really way to really like kind of, I guess, legal way to do it and all that sort of stuff. Unfortunately, there's not really a streaming service for the league yet. Hopefully that changes at some point, but I know in other countries like Canada and places like that, you can access it through like Fox Sports or DAZN or something like that. So there's definitely possibilities if you live in other countries, unfortunately not in the UK. And a final question from Charlotte Patterson. She asks about our thoughts on the speculation about Dal DK to Club Bruges, and how do you think he'd fit into the team or the league? So for those who don't know, DK plays for Orlando City Soccer Club in the USA. 20-year-old striker. So far this season, 8 goals, 3 assists in 17 games. He's been linked with Bruges. However, it seems that Orlando are looking for, I think it's around about like $8 million. So it's quite a big transfer fee for a young player. Personally, I don't think it's the right move for Bruges, in answer to your question, Charlotte. I do think he has got the physicality I don't think he'll have a problem physically in the league. He's a big, strong player. I've liked the brief highlights I've seen of him. Looks like he can hold the ball up quite well. Looks like he's a powerful runner with the ball. The highlights I watched was him constantly getting fouled as well, which is always a good sign. It shows that he just seems a bit of a handful. So I do think he could fit into the system. But I think age-wise, I don't think he's the profile of striker that Bruges are looking for at the moment. I think they need a more kind of like recognised striker who's scored goals in European football and stuff. I think they've already got young player like Mbadji, who we spoke about earlier. So they've got young strikers already. I think as a prospect, I think he'd be really interesting. And I'd like to see him come across to the league. I like the look of him. I think he just looks like he could bully a few defenders, which is always fun to see. I quite like that as a striker myself. I always quite like enjoy seeing strikers give it back to the defenders. Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised to see him getting snapped up in the near future by the look of it. He looks like he's got something about him. So yeah, I don't know if you guys want to come in quickly on this as well.
I think I kind of agree with everything Ben was saying. I think the priority really should be a proven striker. And obviously, I think the risks at the moment with that are too great with them pushing for the title. So if it comes off, it's one for the longer term rather than the short term. Yeah, look for a proven striker first.
I also agree, because also outside of Badji, they also have Openda, who is out on loan now, but is doing really well at Vitesse in the Eredivisie. Like, they're doing having a good season, and also himself is important for them and scoring some goals and important for their attacking playing style. But yeah, so it would be a weird move from Brugge's side, I feel.
Yeah, and I think for DK as well, like, he's at that age where he needs... Mm-hmm. Or probably wants to be playing first team football, and if he had to come and fight amongst those other youngsters for a spot in Bruges. But who knows, if he does make the move, hopefully he does hit the ground running and we get to see him pushing people around and causing havoc, which would be fun. And yeah, I think that's pretty much all we've got time for, Guy. Thanks once again for joining me. It's been a pleasure having you with me for this episode.
Pleasure as always.
Yep, absolutely. Have a good Christmas, everyone.
Yeah, absolutely. Definitely everyone have a really good Christmas and stay safe with everything that's going on. Just a quick special thanks as well to Joseph McDade for our new intro music. We know people have been saying that they quite like it. We're really happy with it. So yeah, shout out to Joseph. As always, we are in a partnership with Freelance Football Ops. If you're interested in signing up to Freelance Football Ops subscription-based newsletter, just check out their Twitter account, search for Freelance Football Ops, or visit www.freelancefootballops.com. Yeah, they find you jobs in writing, design, video, audio, and anything in football media. You get it to your inbox every week, and they're all paid work. And yeah, that about does it for episode 22. We'll be back again next week for our final episode of 2020, looking at the final games of 2020. We hope you've enjoyed our podcast this year, our recent startup podcast. As always, you can find us on Twitter at Belgium Podcast. You can also now find us on Facebook under the same name. All our individual Twitter handles you can also find on our Twitter account, or you can email us belgianfootpodcast@gmail.com. Thanks again for listening, everyone, and we hope to speak to you soon.